kids like me go to college. My name is Charles, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet. With your hosts, Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplet.
Welcome in, everybody. That's right, Tony Mack and the Triplet. Beautiful Saturday morning before we get you ready for some college football. Interesting week again. We got a lot to cover. We're going to get in our picks. We're going to talk about some of these games we've got today. We're going to get to our crying Jordan face of the week, where Aaron and I pick the biggest dunce in college football, according to ourselves. I'll pick one. He'll pick one. We'll put those on Twitter. Give you a little story about why maybe we think they're the biggest dunce in college football this week. And then finally, something we'll get to right now as I introduce him. Aaron Triplett, we do a lot of interesting things on the show, a lot of fun different segments like the crying Jordan face, and we make our picks. But another segment we do, we try to start the show with, you do a little prep work on the day or two before you're putting out a poll. It is your shirt of the week. So Aaron Triplett, tell me how you're doing this morning and give us the Aaron Triplett shirt of the week.
I'm actually a little tired, to be totally honest with you.
Right, it was there with you.
It was a, not only was I got in late last night, went to the high school football game, the Gunnersville game. Really competitive game, by the way, if you didn't catch that.
Oh, yeah, what was the score?
I think it was 51-0 at halftime.
Oh, good. Gunnersville?
Oh, yeah. They poor Douglas. I just didn't stand a chance. But went out with some friends, got in kind of late, so I got up, tweeted out a poll yesterday. It was between Penn State, NC State, and Texas. I put Texas on there a couple times just for you. I think they're eventually going to get there, but I think you're going to do all you can to prevent Texas from rearing its ugly head in this studio.
Well, you know next week is the game, right? And you're going to be, you and your lovely wife and your brother are all going to be in Florence with me and my lovely soon-to-be wife watching that game. So you're going to get to see why exactly I hate Texas so much next weekend. So if you're rooting for them, I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a rough afternoon.
I just kind of want to see a good game with that one because I think that's a fun rivalry.
Means you're pulling for them. That's exactly what that means. Let's be honest. That means you're pulling for Texas.
Well, man, I don't want to see a boring game. But, no, Penn State, actually, we had 8 votes this time. Penn State won the voting outright. There wasn't a tie. I didn't have to break the tie. But interesting story. This Penn State shirt is very seasoned. It's a little bit old. The reason that I started collecting these team shirts was my dad used to travel with his job a lot when he was working. He would go to a lot of cities close to these major universities or maybe at these major universities, have these meetings and things like that. And he would always get, you know, my brother and I a shirt, you know, from whatever local school it was. And I've got several in my collection that are, you know, like smalls. And this is one of those smalls. And I'm not a small. I'm about halfway in between a medium and a large. So squeezing it, I put on this shirt this morning, and I was like, goodness, it's going to be a struggle. The Stanford shirt I wore several weeks ago is also a small, but shirts are so inconsistent with size. Like, I wore that Stanford shirt, and it felt like I was, you know, it had so much more room than this one. And I've got a Delaware shirt at home that's also, I think that one might actually be a youth large, and it's bigger than this one. Like, for sure. And I can still wear it very easily. But very tight fit. But Penn State getting a little love today. So, like I said, I just kind of took the team shirts that we would always get from my dad, and I kind of ran with it as my own thing. And I've got, you know, as you can tell, I throw out 3 choices every week. And I've got basically a whole, like, rack on a closet full of team shirts. So
That is certainly your tradition. Aaron has his tradition. We have traditions all throughout college football, some which a lot of people have for a long time. So we've got traditions on this show that we hope stick around, like some of our segments. Our Crying Jordan Face is my personal favorite. Our pick segment is becoming a lot of fun. But even throughout college football, obviously, one of the reasons everybody loves college football as much as they do, it's rich with tradition. School's been around for so long. A lot of these traditions go from songs they sing, ways they come into the stadium, mascots that they have. And we've seen a team not be really consistent with mascots over the last, 10, 12, 14 years.
Since
Colonel Reb retired. And as Ole Miss, obviously switching from Colonel Reb after he retired, I believe, and then 2010, they put up a vote. And Rebel the Bear won over the Landshark in 2010. Well, just 7 years later, Rebel the Bear is out as the Ole Miss mascot. And before next season, the Athletics Association for Ole Miss, they have to design and launch their new Landshark mascot. Aaron, you're a guy of tradition. You love consistency. You don't like change at all, to a fault. What do you think about the change at mascot here? And this Landshark thing really started, 08, when the defense would put their hand in a fin on their head and say, "Fins up," and it really kind of started there.
I thought the Landshark, at least with the defense thing, started a little bit later than that. I might be mistaken. I don't remember it.
I might be generous.
You could be correct. I don't exactly remember. I do remember that in recent years for sure when they would do that. And, of course, in 03, they retired Colonel Reb as the actual, guy in a suit mascot. They didn't retire him completely until 2010 when they got rid of the Rebel logo of Colonel Reb that was used by the school and by, you still see it everywhere, but they stopped using it and went with the Black Bear. They had a vote between, it was Black Bear and a Land Shark and one more, and I honestly don't remember what that third thing was, but there was three, and of course the Black Bear won, and then the Land Shark replacing it this year, or going into next year. And this doesn't bother me just because, it's Ole Miss and they've had this. Colonel Reb is technically, in my opinion, I wouldn't have changed the mascot at all. I would have just been one of those teams without one, because there's some teams who don't have one on the field. I would have done that personally if I was in that position. But no, this doesn't bother me. But you're right, I do have problems with certain changes, and it's not necessarily with mascots. For me, it's uniforms. And those people closest to me know that uniforms, the uniform problem that they have in college football now is becoming such an epidemic, and it disgusts me.
I wouldn't say it's just an epidemic in college football. It's even transitioning into the NFL.
Transitioning into the NFL
with the whole color rush deal on Thursday night.
And the color rush doesn't. I like that for the most part, but the part that I don't like about it is when they required every team to participate in it. And while I think it, for example, when the Rams would wear that, they wore that yellow, that dandelion looking. I liked that. I thought that most of the other, the Jaguars was hideous, that, puke mustard color, but most of them are pretty cool. But making Green Bay
all white,
a team that has never worn anything other than green on top and yellow on bottom, and then yellow pants and white top on the road, making them change for the first time in history. Don't do that. The teams with the traditional teams in the NFL, don't make them change uniforms. That's really the only beef I have with the color rush. But the uniform, you're right, is changing, because Tampa Bay, when they changed their uniforms, what are we going on now? 3-4 years that Tampa Bay's had the new look. I hate it. The one before that I liked, but they destroyed it with these disgusting looking numbers and these chrome helmets. It's a toss up between Tampa Bay, Jacksonville, and Seattle for the worst uniforms in the NFL.
If you want to see a sexy NFL jersey this weekend, I would suggest checking out the Rams game, because I think they're going with a more traditional, one of their older looks. And you need to, you could get on Twitter and look it up, because that's where I saw it. Damon Amendola, DA, CBS Sports Radio, he comes on Tom Abraham's show throughout the week on Mondays, and him and Tom are jersey snubs like yourself, and he tweeted those out, and he was in heaven It was a euphoric feeling for him. But if you want to be in Jersey heaven, such as the Rams jerseys this weekend, do not, and I encourage you, do not look at Oregon's uniforms tonight when they take on Washington State. I've got a picture of them right here, Aaron. And it's as you can tell, it's all highlighter yellow with black. It looks like black, maybe dark green numbers. Yeah, it looks like dark green numbers. When are they going to be sponsored by Sharpie? When is Sharpie going to pick them up? When is Nike going to go out there and get Sharpie to sponsor these guys? Because that's exactly what it is. It's a highlighter yellow. I do like their gloves, though. Their gloves have the duck, the yellow duck, when you put your hands together. But I brought up, I'm glad you kind of segued into uniforms, because I wanted to ask you about a particular uniform this weekend. But first, we were talking about the Color Rush deal. Are they missing an opportunity? Because Color Rush is on Thursdays. Are they missing an opportunity? I know that some weeks teams do throwback jerseys. Why not make Thursday a throwback Thursday type deal? I mean, it's a nationwide phenomenon on Twitter and Facebook. You hashtag throwback Thursday on Thursdays, and you throw back a picture or a memory or anything of that nature. Why not do that? Why are they missing a big opportunity here?
I think so. I totally agree with that point, and I've actually never thought about it. I think I probably have in passing, but I really enjoy throwback uniforms. I think that those are a good thing. Because see, I'm not much of a changing jerseys kind of person. I like, you know, teams having two, maybe three jerseys at the most, at all levels of football. But you're right, the throwback would be a great idea, because the Giants already do that a little bit when they have their color rush, because they wear the old white jerseys from like the 80s and the 90s with the Giants written on the helmet. Those are really cool. I mean, just imagine New England could wear the ones with the Patriot hiking the football. That they wore those on Thanksgiving several years ago, but they could wear those. Yeah, I think they are missing an opportunity there, because I think a lot of people want to see those. I like what the Rams are doing this week. They're going with the more it's that periwinkle and dandelion is what I like to call those two colors. But they already kind of do those. But the throwbacks would be a great idea, I think, for all the teams. I mean, you can imagine, you know, that old the old Philadelphia Eagle uniform, the one that Herm Edwards wore way back when. Those would be cool to see. Bring back the old Miami Dolphin uniforms, because these new – oh, my goodness. Don't even get me started. Kevin, if you're listening, shout out to much we hate the new Miami Dolphin logo and jersey.
Well, I'll let you know he is listening, because he just texted in the show. I don't think Kevin has Twitter. He just texted
in
the show.
He doesn't. It's funny, because me and him are so alike. I have Twitter, and he doesn't, but he has Instagram. I actually have Instagram, but I have never once posted on Instagram. So – Kevin, that's where we're different.
Kevin weighs in. He says, NC State and Louisville this Thursday were some of the worst I've ever seen. I almost couldn't watch. If you were watching Thursday night, it turned out to be a pretty good game. NC State wore all black. I'm starting to hate the whole blackout deal, especially if black has never been a part of your
uniform. It's so overdone. It's the most overdone uniform in college football.
That might be one of the first blackouts I've seen where the blackout team won. Also, so and, usually they lose those games, it seems.
And now that teams are – they're not only going blackout, they're going – with the jersey, they're going, let's black our entire uniform out. And I remember Georgia kind of made that famous when they did it against Auburn for the first time, and I think it was I think it was 07 that they did it for the first time, 07 or 08, and it was just the black jersey, and they still had the red helmets and the silver pants. So that was – I mean, I didn't have a problem with that, really, because – and black is part of Georgia's color. It's the G on the helmet. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like they're – but what bothers me almost more than blackouts are the gray. The amount of schools in college football that all of a sudden claim gray is their third or fourth color. It's ridiculous. Now, Baylor started that. Thank you, Baylor.
Now, Tennessee does the smoky grays, and I like their smoky grays. I really do. Whenever they use the smoky grays at home, they always checkerboard the stadium, and it makes no sense to me. We're going to wear smoky grays on the field, but we're going to checker out the stadium with orange and white. Why? Make your uniforms match your crowd if you're going to do that way. Like Oklahoma today, they're changing up their uniforms. I wanted to ask you about the uniforms. I like what their uniforms look like, but they're striping the stadium. They're going crimson and white. They're trying to stripe the stadium. match your crowd if you're going to do that. But Oklahoma today, doing something they've never done before. I'm actually wearing the alternate jersey they will be wearing today. They started this, I think, 4 years ago in 2014, I think, was the season they started these, where they blend in some cream with the traditional crimson jersey. Well, today they're going to wear that top, but they're going all red bottoms. They're going red on red this weekend, and I think it looks fantastic. One of the reasons I loved it the most was the video when they revealed it. Former linebacker Eric Stryker was a monster. Alabama fans, you remember Eric Stryker for tormenting your offense in the Sugar Bowl back in 2014. He couldn't make it in the NFL. He's a defensive assistant now for the Sooners. Well, he came out wearing those jerseys and his number 19 showing his vintage Eric Stryker heart, which was fantastic. So that had a little bit to do with it, but I like it. I'm a traditional program like Oklahoma. You know, you're one of those guys where if they change it up, it automatically sends up a red flag for you because they're one of the more traditional type programs. But I feel like they're getting it right when they pull out these alternate uniforms. I felt like they've gotten it right every single time.
There's some teams that can pull it off, and I'm looking at you're showing this to me on I can see it over the computer screen, and I've seen them wear this jersey before, and I guess I don't mind it. It's not like ugly, which because that's what a lot of teams do, especially the traditional teams that really have no business doing it. They make their alternate jerseys ugly, and they're not ugly. But so I guess it doesn't bother me that much. But for example. When Ohio State, was it last year, wore all black? One of those goofy blackout deals? Was that last year?
I can't remember if it was last year or the year before that, but they've done it. Yeah.
They've done it. And
I want to say it was the year before because Braxton Miller was there, and I remember him being out there as a receiver wearing black.
One of the worst is, and they've gotten a little bit better since Mark Richt has gotten there, the University of Miami. Oh, my goodness. Back in... In the infamous, I can't even remember their coach, Al Golden, the Al Golden Miami days. Oh my goodness, am I getting that right? Is that Al Golden who coached at Miami?
Miami's had a few coaches. I remember
right before Mark Richt, he was from Temple, wasn't that him? Either way, he was fireable, whoever it was, and forgettable. But those jerseys that they wore, they jacked it all up, and it was disgusting. But ever since Mark Richt got back, they've switched to what they wore when they were a dominant team in the 80s, going back to more traditional look, and I love it. And I wish more. And I mean, I'm not an Alabama fan by any means, but they do it right. You know, it's the same thing every week. Auburn. When the one thing that annoyed me about Auburn was when they kind of made their decals on their helmets shiny and a couple years ago. That drove me absolutely insane.
Speaking of shiny, and then we'll change the subject. We'll get to some actual football after the break here in a second. But a friend of ours, Jordan Alcorn, this is a big topic, something that I've never really been that big on. Jerseys never really changed or bothered me that much unless it was a huge change, very noticeable. I'm not a big jersey stickler like you, and a lot of people seem to be. Jordan, a good friend of ours, just weighed in on the show. He said, worst one I ever saw was A&M wearing the state of Texas on their jerseys, and I remember that one because that was one of the ones that stood out to me the most. Like, well, wait a minute, there's a big difference here. Why are they doing that? I believe those were the big chrome type style jerseys.
I can't
those
remember
were
if
disgusting.
I can't. That might have been it, but I'm thinking of the ones where they had played. It was 2014, and Kenny Hill was playing quarterback. They went to Mississippi State and wore like ice white.
Yeah,
and it was like white with like this chromey silver. It was the ugliest jersey I'd ever seen in my life. And it was, of course, made by Adidas. And, of course, Adidas is involved in this all college basketball stuff. Adidas, you make the worst. Your product sucks. I mean, I'm just being brutally honest to Adidas. At least their products for at least college football is awful. I don't even know how you could – you look like you can peel off the numbers.
See, I enjoy that. That's true. The college football product they put out is not great. I personally do love the Adidas NBA jerseys. I have like 14 or 15 of them, so I do like their NBA product.
They have to, and see, I didn't know because it was never on the jerseys. I don't think that Adidas.
It's on the ones you buy. Like if you have the ones like I do, it's always on the bottom right.
I just never seen it, but I figured that out. I think last year that they did that, and they had done a good job with those. But the what they do for college football is terrible.
Right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into some actual football. We'll talk about some of the SEC games that aren't going to quite make our big game picks of the week because we seemingly enough have some blowouts coming up this week. We'll maybe talk about some of the results from last week, some of the more dominant teams in the SEC, who stands out in the country. And Aaron and I, we might update our college football playoff, but that does not happen without a break. We'll be right back. Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet. Still hour number one here. Spent the majority of the first segment here talking about tradition and jerseys. And it's been a lot of fun, but it's time to get into football. It's time to get into the actual meat and potatoes of this whole thing this weekend. We got some interesting matchups. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully, there's been a lot of letdowns this year in college football, where I'm still looking for that one afternoon game and that one evening game that just grips you from beginning to end in the same week. I haven't quite gotten that. But real quick, before we jump into some of this, Aaron, it's that time. It's my favorite time. That's right. Biggest dunce of the week. It's time for you and I to give our crying Jordan face of the week. Aaron, I'm going to let you start it out. Give me the biggest idiot, the crying Jordan face of the week for Aaron Triplett.
All right. My crying Jordan face of the week comes from the SEC.
Okay, mine too.
As you might expect, I'm tweeting it out right now.
Go ahead and hit that send button.
Well, I'm typing it up.
You want me to start? I'll start.
Are you ready to hit send?
Oh, yeah. I typed it up during the break. My crying Jordan face of the week. University of Tennessee. Now, I tweeted a picture. It's an easy one. I know, guys. It's a really easy target. I tweeted a picture of their trash can with a crying Jordan face on it. It kind of looks beautiful. I'm not going to lie to you. It's wonderful. But this thing is spiraling way out of control. And then let's not lie about it. It's something everybody loves to talk about. They love to see the destruction of the University of Tennessee for whatever reason. I think it's more so because it's just an ongoing running joke with Butch Jones lecturing the media, them getting blown out by Georgia 41 to nothing. And then players getting injured in practice, and Butch Jones saying that Shy Tuttle suffered some kind of a bone injury because he tripped on a helmet at halftime. Or he tripped on a helmet during practice. And then it comes out, and then he goes into a lecture on the media, then they get blown out, and then he comes out and has to admit what happened, or he didn't even have to admit it. It comes out that players Daryl Taylor and offensive lineman Trey Smith got into another huge fight Thursday in practice during the one-minute drill. Offensive lineman Trey Smith, fantastic football player, was the one-minute drill. He blocked Taylor into the ground, and Smith somehow lost his helmet. Taylor didn't like it. Taylor started kicking from the ground and started wrestling. He kicked Trey Smith in the face to where Trey Smith needed stitches. That's ridiculous. This thing is so far out of control. Butch Jones, he can't win on the field against a quality opponent. He can't keep players healthy. And he's obviously got players fighting in the locker room, and he's trying to cover it up by saying some tripped on helmets. I'm not buying that at all, that a guy tripped on a helmet and it suffered some kind of a bone injury, and supposedly the guy he was fighting ended up with a concussion. There's no way he got a concussion because I tripped on a helmet. That doesn't make any sense. Butch Jones, he's way out of his league here, and it's time to go ahead and get rid of this guy because this whole program, it's past the whole dumpster fire portion, and it's turned into just an absolute joke. And they need some damage control because you've already got players who haven't necessarily decommitted, but they're reopening their recruiting. They're saying, okay, let me start looking elsewhere because I don't like this situation. And I think the only reason they're not decommitting and the only reason they're just deciding to reopen their recruiting is simply because there's hope that Butch Jones isn't going to be the head coach. The hope is I think the odds of all the other coaches that they have out there, like their betting odds you can bet on, are who might be the next coach of Tennessee football. And I think some of those coaches are catching some of these players. Like, I might want to play over there still if Chip Kelly comes in, or if John Gruden, who's a huge, huge dog to win this thing, ends up being the head coach. I think that's the only thing saving these players from actually decommitting from the university. But Butch Jones needs to go. He needs to go immediately. And they need to start saving some face, because he was the Band-Aid of this football program. Well, the Band-Aid's been ripped off, and the wound is open, and it's gushing out. They need to slap another one on there before it gets out of control.
Yeah, they're in just a terrible, terrible situation over there. And you're right, it's past the dumpster fire portion, and I wouldn't even wait till the end of the season to fire Butch Jones. I would go ahead and do it right now, because there's no sense in waiting around. You can go ahead and start shopping for new coaches now. But on to mine. We're staying in the SEC with my crying Jordan face. Very similar situation to the one at Tennessee. But my crying Jordan face of the week is not Ed Orgeron at LSU, as you might think, after losing the embarrassing game to Troy last week, which, of course, it's an embarrassment. But it's not Orgeron. It's actually Athletic Director Joe Oliva is my crying Jordan face of the week, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, the whole Les Miles situation last year, the way that was handled was pitiful. It shouldn't have been handled that way. And the other is, for hiring Ed Orgeron, like, it's proven that this guy, you know, can't be a head coach at the highest level. When he was at Ole Miss, you know, it was a disaster. But, I mean, I like Ed Orgeron. I think he's a great position coach. I think he's a great recruiter. I think he's a great motivator. He's not a head coach. You hired him because the fans like him, the players like him, and really you had nowhere else to turn to. You had nowhere else to turn to. Nobody wanted to come in to LSU and try to kind of pick up what Les Miles had left. And Les Miles, of course, is a legend at LSU, won so many games, won a national championship. And Orgeron's always going to be looked at, you know, as, you know, Miles' successor, and they're not going to be they're obviously not near as good as, you know, what they were under Les Miles. They're already behind. I mean, they lost to Troy. I mean, give credit to Troy. They were one of the favorites to win that the Sun Belt Conference this year. Don't get me wrong.
A lot of people preseason also, there are a few, and I know the Jocks Roundtable especially, who thought preseason that Troy had a chance to beat LSU.
And they obviously did so, played a very good game, really had it in hand, and really let LSU just get back into it. But, you know, like I said, Joe Oliva, nowhere else to turn except to hire, you know, Orgeron. But, and Orgeron, of course, he wanted the job. Like, he was desperate for it. He was pleading for it. And they hired him. And the guy's buyout is $10 million.
That's where he messed up the biggest.
Why? A guy who would have almost coached your program for free, who already is unproven as a head coach, you make his buyout $10 million? What a joke. Like, you might as well just go ahead and cost your university $10 million, because I honestly don't think that Orgeron's going to make it past this season. If things continue to spiral out of control after that loss to Troy, if they don't beat Florida this weekend, it doesn't get any easier from the Florida game, because Florida is, you got Tennessee is the worst shape right now of the big names in the SEC, followed by LSU. But Florida is not far behind. Florida is somehow ranked. I have no idea how.
They keep winning. They're undefeated in the SEC.
Yeah, who have they played? Vanderbilt in Kentucky and Tennessee, which they, you know, almost went to overtime with this dumpster fire Tennessee team. Should have went to overtime, but of course, you know, leave it to Tennessee to blow that game. But LSU is, if they don't beat Florida this weekend, it doesn't get any easier, because they've got Auburn coming up next week. They do get that at home. They've got Auburn next week. They still got to play Alabama. They still have to play Arkansas. They still have to play Texas A&M. It does not get any easier for LSU, and that's why Joe Oliva is my crying Jordan face of the week. Not only did he make a poor hire, in my opinion, in Orgeron, but he made his buyout, you know, $10 million. Congratulations. You've just cost your school $10 million, or set your program back, you know, 5 years, depending on how long you keep him. So, congratulations.
I think the Orgeron hire was one of those caught-up-in-the-moment type deals. I know they didn't hire him immediately when Miles got fired, but after Miles was dismissed after the Auburn game last year, it was pretty much Orgeron as the interim from after that game the rest of the way. It was an open audition. He was auditioning for that job. And then you go in there and you play that masterful game against Alabama defensively and only give up 10 points and a 10-0 loss. That game pretty much got him the job. And I can't really fault him for that, because while Orgeron didn't beat Alabama, he was the most competitive in the SEC by far against the Crimson Tide last year, and that's really your measuring stick. Your measuring stick is when you're going to hire somebody. Obviously, you want to see how successful and the kind of culture they can have, but how are they going to match up against the best of the best in Alabama? And Orgeron did that. So I really don't fault him for hiring him per se, but it's the buyout, like you mentioned. That's ridiculous. A guy who's, as a head coach, proven to be very subpar, you can't give him a $10 million buyout. That's nonsense. That's more than Bobby Petrino's buyout at Louisville before it was cut in half. It's been cut in half because of the athletic director getting fired. It was originally $8 million, but there was something in the contract that said if by this year or this year or this year, if this guy is not the athletic director, then your buyout will be cut in half. So now his buyout's $4 million, but it would have been $8 million. Orgeron still has a higher buyout than that, and Bobby Petrino is hands down a better coach than Ed Orgeron. Put it this way, the SEC fans, since week two, have been trying to get Orgeron out of the SEC and trying to get Bobby Petrino back in the SEC. And you're telling me that in order to fire this guy, I have to pay him more than an actual good coach to get rid of him? That's where he messed up. And something that Orgeron's messed up on that he had last year that got him the job against Alabama was that game against Alabama, the defensive just monstrosity that they had. They were monstrous out there. The intensity that defense played with, the physical power that defense played with, is gone. The last 2 weeks, offensively, we kind of knew they were going to struggle against decent teams because all they had is Darius Geis, and now he's been hurt. But against good teams, when they had Leonard Fournette, it showed that you can't be one-dimensional against really good teams in the SEC, albeit there really haven't been that many good teams in the SEC lately. But when you go up against one, you can't be one-dimensional. Even when you had Leonard Fournette, you came up short. Now all you have is Darius Geis. Etling's not getting the job done, so you kind of expected offensively we're still going to be in a rut this year. But you're expected to be carried, like Florida, by your defense, and you're not. The last 2 weeks, or the last two of the last three games, they gave up 285 yards on the ground to Mississippi State. That's an SEC opponent, but you can't give up. If you're LSU, that is absurd.
Just look what Georgia and Auburn did to Mississippi State in two straight weeks.
Yeah.
And look what you did in just the 1 week.
Mississippi State, I'm still going to stand by Mississippi State being a way different team on the road than they are at home, and they got LSU at home. They had to go to Georgia and to Auburn. I think that whenever they play Alabama, I'm not saying they'll beat Alabama, but I think Alabama will see a different Mississippi State team because it will be at home and the expectation will be gone. But my point here is you're right. Whether it was a great Mississippi State team or not, you're LSU. You don't give up that many yards on the ground. That is absurd. You gave up almost 500 total yards of offense. You give up 285 on the ground. And then Detroit, who couldn't throw the ball. They ran it 40-something times, I think. Pretty much telling you, hey, this is what we're about to do to you. Try to stop me. We're Troy. We're in Death Valley telling you during your homecoming, hey, try to stop our run game. That should be a walk in the park. You gave up 206 yards on the ground, and now you have to play Florida, who's predominantly a run team, because Felipe Franks, other than a couple deep heaves downfield to Tyree Cleveland, who I don't believe is playing this week, can't throw it 8 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. So you're going to have to nut up and stop the run, and I don't know if you can. It's like you said, Oliva messed up by trusting this guy, and this guy messed up by taking a very defensively and talent-rich program like LSU, and very quickly, it hasn't even taken a season, Aaron. I know last year he was the interim. Those were Les Miles guys. This year, he's the head guy. He had all offseason to instill his culture and what he want, his beliefs. And in what? How many games? Five games? He's completely destroyed that. I'm with you. It's a joke.
Yeah, it's problematic when you have, I just don't understand it. Of course, a lot of people believe in the conundrum that Nick Saban killed LSU, which I think to that some extent is correct. I mean, he was the head coach at LSU, and I mean, everybody's going to lose to a small team like that every now and again. It's bound to happen.
Nick Saban, when he was at LSU, lost to UAB. And Nick Saban, when he was at Alabama in his first year, lost to Louisiana Monroe. I mean, it's going to happen. But and I think we might be taking that too into – but I think it's a little bit – this has a different feel about it because they haven't looked good at all this season so far. And
I think there's a different feel about it as well because it's the state of the SEC right now. Conference-wide, they're not very good. You know, you've got the whole East, which is terrible. Other than Georgia, they're really awful. They've been led by Florida the last 2 years, who really doesn't have an offensive identity. I know they run the football, but and they don't really run it that well. Their identity was score on defense, and you'll win the football game. But the East is so awful, so you're limited. You have to go to the West now, who was such a good power conference a couple years ago in them by themselves. That division could have stood alone as the SEC, where you had Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU, Alabama, all very, very good, ranked very high. Now you look over there, you're running out of options. You're like, okay, who are our options to pull for in the SEC? Because they're supposed to be, they get all the talent. They're supposed to be the best conference in the country, and they really don't look like it outside of Alabama, Auburn, Georgia. Let's see if LSU's any good, and they're not. So they're one of the power programs of this conference, and this conference is not in a state as it used to be. So there's more of a sense of urgency for this conference, and I think that's why they're looking at this game. I understand, like you mentioned, it's Ed Orgeron's first year at LSU, Alabama, Nick Saban's first year at Alabama, they lost to Monroe. It's a little different just because the state of the SEC, of what it used to be, it's way, way down, and fans want to see it get back way, way up immediately, and they're coming to the realization now that it's just not happening, and LSU's a big part of it.
And the SEC is so down, and a lot of fans of the SEC don't want to admit, but I think a lot of them are starting to come to grips with how bad the SEC actually is. It's become arguably the weakest of the Power Five conferences. And all the Power Five conferences have weak teams. They have the scrub teams that, I mean, all of them have that. But top to bottom, the SEC is probably, I would say, it's below average.
Yeah.
As far from top to bottom,
that's a hot take.
And it is below average because you
don't
look
mean at the below average part. I'm saying that they're potentially the worst of the Power Five conferences.
It's a bold statement, but if you look at from top to bottom at every team, examine every team, you have it's possible that, I mean, you're looking at all the teams and you look at some of the matchups they've had. I mean, TCU really took it to Arkansas, and top to bottom, you know, I mean. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas are all, you know.
West Virginia,
all pretty solid. You look at the Big Ten is the best conference in football right now because, you know, I think they have, you know, five teams in the top 12 or something like that. And it's the ACC and the SEC who people were talking about as the two best conferences in football, you know, over a couple years ago. It's basically one team from each of those conferences because I think Clemson is so far out in front of the rest of the ACC, at least right now. So it might be between the ACC and the SEC. But, I mean, you look back at the fall from grace that the SEC has had since about 2010. 2010, thinking back on the year 2010, the year Auburn won the national championship, the SEC that year, just look back on it. You know, that's – Alabama was coming off the national championship. LSU was a top 10 team. Auburn was a top 10 team. Arkansas was a top 10 team. Georgia had a rough year, but they were great the next 2 years. South Carolina had won 10 games that year. They beat Alabama. That was that 2010, I think 2012, the year that Auburn was so bad, but you know, you had Alabama, you had LSU, you had Georgia, who
2014 was another one. That was the first year of the playoff.
First year of the playoff. I mean, but since then, the SEC is just Alabama goes up and up and up, and the rest of them have taken a step back. And if it's not for Georgia and Auburn right now, the SEC has nothing to hang its hat on, nothing besides Alabama. And Alabama's carried the weight of this conference for, you know, the better part of really at least 3 to 4 years now. And they're thankfully, you know, Auburn and Georgia have, you know, what looks to be. I mean, I think that the three best defenses the four best defenses in football are Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, and Clemson. And Clemson might have the best one out of all of them, but the SEC still has the three best defenses. But outside of those three teams, I would take my chances on any other team from any other conference against a lot of those teams.
Yeah, there's a huge drop. It's not just that those three teams are really, really good. It's the gap between them is terrible. We're gonna take a quick break because we're running out of time here. We're going to get to the last segment of this hour. Then we'll jump into the top of the 10 and tell you guys about all the fun things we're going to be doing. We're going to be making our picks. We're going to talk a little bit more about the state of the SEC, which is a good topic right now. But none of that happens until this break is over. This is Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. This is Tony Mack and the Triplet. Tony Mack and the Triplet, just a couple minutes here before we get you ready for the top of the hour, but Aaron touched on something that's been very interesting. He mentioned that all but pretty much confirmed that at the SEC might be the weakest of the Power 5 conferences. Very, very hot take there. And I'll say it's close. I'd probably still say the Big 12 is worse. But you look at it, and here's what I want to see whenever I'm looking at conferences. And that is, not just one division dominating. You got to have somebody on the opposing side when it comes to conference championship time to make you look not so weak. Alabama solidified themselves to where it doesn't matter who they play. If they put up 100 points on Clemson, or if they put up 100 points on me and Aaron, people are going to think they're the best team ever because they have the talent and they can survive that. But there are other conferences and other teams who can't. And in the Big Ten, Aaron, you're right. The Big Ten, the East, is so dominant with Penn State.
By far the best division in football.
Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. Maryland's played well down to their third-string quarterback. So and Michigan State has a big game against Michigan today. I get that. On the other side, though, it's a two-team race between Wisconsin and Nebraska, and honestly, that's not even a race.
Nebraska is pitiful. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's kind of like the SEC East with just Georgia, and I don't even think Wisconsin is all that good. So it's going to be either Michigan, Penn State, or Ohio State versus Wisconsin. And
so here's why I think – Here's my argument for the ACC to be the best conference, and that's because you put Alabama against whoever in the conference championship, even if it's Georgia. Is there much question who's going to win that football game?
Well, at least this year, with this year's Georgia defense against Alabama's offense and some of the injuries Alabama's had, what feels like the first time ever, they're really getting kind of bit with the injury bug on both sides of the ball. But, Alabama would come in as comfortable touchdown favorites, I think, in that game.
I think so, too. And then in the Big Ten Championship, whether it's Penn State, Ohio State, or Michigan, they're going to be a pretty good favorite over Wisconsin. In the ACC, you still might see that line, but there are three teams I can see Clemson getting matched up with where you have to stop and say, wait, that may be a good game. That may be the best conference championship we've seen. Clemson could go against Georgia Tech. That's intriguing because of Georgia Tech's offense. They're 2-0 in their conference. They're only lost to Tennessee. And then you look at Miami, who's playing well right now under Mark Richt. They still got some issues, but they're playing well under Mark Richt. You look at that game, and that's not a comfortable, familiar matchup, so you're thinking, maybe Miami can get them out of their element a little bit. And then you look at the Virginia Tech game. I know Clemson just beat them bad, but last year they played them in the conference championship game, and things can happen later in the season. I just think there's more options in that Coastal Division than there are in any other conference that can pose a threat to the obvious powerhouse in the other division. So that's why I make my argument for the ACC. I coming into it, everybody thought that Atlantic Division was the best division in football, which it's still – there's still an argument for that. Florida State obviously been bitten by the injury bug too. Wake Forest playing well for themselves. Louisville is sitting at third to last of the division right now. NC State is second in that division. It's a very good football division. So I think that can make a case as well. And that division's already started beating up on each other. The Big Ten, they haven't gotten into starting to actually play each other. We'll get a first taste of that with Michigan State. But that's to be determined. But those are definitely the two best divisions of college football so far. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. It's going to be top of the hour. We're going to have our picks for you right here. I'm Tony Mack and the Triplet, 730, 103.9 The Ump.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet, with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplett.
And welcome back. Tony back in the Triplet right here on Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump, carrying you all the way up till kickoff here at 11 a.m. on this, October the 7th. That's right. We're already in October. We're going to get into some of the good rivalries here coming up soon here in just a few weeks. Great month of football here coming up. Also, I will be getting married at the end of this month. Auburn and Alabama will have a bye week this month so that everybody can join me on that weekend. I will be getting married that weekend. So that weekend, October 28th, Auburn and Alabama having a bye week. Join me in not really watching much football that weekend. All right, Aaron, let's go ahead and do this. I did this last week to you, okay? And it was when we read through our picks. I kind of put you on a walk of shame a little bit, all right?
That's what I called it.
So this week, you got me a little bit. But we'll let everybody else hear that. So do you have the game list in front of you to run down the list here?
From last week? No, I don't. I do not.
Okay, if you remember how it went, start underneath the USC game. I'll load up everything. The floor is yours.
Well, last week we picked, how many games? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We picked 6 total. We had 2 NFL games at the end. The first one was at Friday night, USC, Washington State. I went with USC.
Good job by you.
But USC lost.
Well, I'm just saying what we agreed.
Oh, we agreed. Yeah, we did. I was wondering. I was like, wait a minute. No, Washington State definitely beat USC.
But as far as the results, we didn't do so good.
Yeah.
We didn't do so good.
But the next game, we went Georgia and Tennessee, and we both went with Georgia.
Good job by us.
Good job by us.
I feel like I'm chewing Orbit when I do that.
What is it? Refreshing clean, no matter what. Whatever. definitely sounds just like that.
Anyways, I'm supposed to be walking shamefully here. Go ahead.
And then we had Mississippi State and Auburn. We both went with Auburn. Now, we're getting into the good ones right here.
Oh, lovely. We can stop right there. That sounded pretty good.
So, we had Clemson on the road against Virginia Tech. I went with Clemson.
Yeah, by you.
And who did you go with?
I went with Virginia Tech, I believe. That's what that says. That's one. That's just one.
So moving on, we went. We picked the Oakland Raiders and the Denver Broncos. I went with the Denver Broncos. And who did you go with?
The Oakland Raiders.
And then the last game we picked Titans, local Titans. They went on the road to take on the Houston Texans. I took the Houston Texans. And you went with?
They didn't play last week. That game didn't happen. The Titans and they both forfeited that game. They will both play 15 games this year. That game did not happen. I went with the Titans. And I believe I told you that was the dumbest pick you've ever made, picking the Texans also. So I deserve two for that one.
They went out and hung 57 on the Titans.
You didn't have to go that far.
Didn't think it was good. Who would have thought that the Houston Texans would explode for some offense, but... More good things that we saw to Deshaun Watson, but a good week for me. I took the lead back. Got to take you on a little walk of shame there. So
you want to know how long that walk is? The walk is pretty long because it's even transitioned into this week. That the path has paved its way right into this week because one of the games we picked this week was Louisville and NC State. And Aaron, got to give it to you, man. You went with NC State. It's a good pick. It was a good pick. I, on the other hand. I went with Louisville, and it was mainly because you picked NC State first, and I was like, I wanted to go with NC State, but I felt comfortable enough. I'm like, well, he's leaving me the opportunity to pick the reigning Heisman Trophy winner who absolutely torched this team a year ago. I'm going to go and do that and get a game back on him. I felt so good about it. I was like, Louisville's going to win this football game. NC State who? Bradley Chubb, you're a punk for spitting on Florida State's logo. Let's do this. No, it's not how that worked out. So Aaron has a 3-game lead on me now. I just want to bring up cautiously before we make our picks, Aaron. Remember what happened last time you gained that 3-game lead on me. Just remember that. I went a perfect 6-0 that week.
And I said this after you went that perfect 6-0 and won all 4 games against me. And then I said, well, you know, it just happens like that. It goes in sequences like that. And obviously it happened like that again, although in my favor. I feel like what I really feel like is that if it's not like we don't normally gain a game on each other, but when we do, it's like in huge chunks.
Yeah, that's how it's been this year. Now, you wanted to mention something earlier, going back to how dominant these teams have been, how dominant certain teams are in conferences, and how weak others are, and how the SEC really isn't performing up to its potential. And you made a good point on the break, and you were discussing that the reason why you feel the SEC is so down is not necessarily because of how many teams they have that aren't playing well. It's the big name teams that aren't playing very well.
Yeah, and I probably made a really bold statement saying the SEC is the weakest of the Power Five right now. And I don't think, after really rethinking about that, that's probably not the case. What is the case, though, is that the teams that are supposed to be good, that are historically good, the brand name teams of the SEC, your Floridas, your Tennessees, your LSUs, are terrible. They're so bad compared to the other brands in the other conferences, because if you look at the brands of the conferences, the brand name teams are doing pretty well for themselves outside of the SEC. You have a couple that come to mind. Nebraska is one of them. Miami, but Miami's having a good start to the season. So not really Miami, but you have Nebraska from the Big Ten,
Penn State, Michigan.
Penn State, Michigan are doing well. Florida State, rough start with injuries, but, you know, last few years, definitely a good team. USC, yeah, they just lost to Washington State, but they're still a formidable team. Oregon's having a kind of a bounce back season so far.
Oklahoma has carried this conference to what it looks like it might be a third straight conference victory.
Yes, and Oklahoma, and Texas is. They're not. Texas was that glaring, you know, brand team that's been down. But they played USC a close game, and after that loss to Maryland, they've looked better. But really, it's the SEC with those three teams that are, you know, the teams that are supposed to be good that you always think about that just aren't.
I think that this conference was hyped up so much when they went on that big run where they won all those championships, what, 9 in a row before Auburn blew that one against Florida State. They were chalked up to be so much better than every other conference that when teams like you mentioned, USC has kind of been down, Texas has kind of been down the last couple of years, they expect that. They expect outside of the SEC, they expect some guys like this, some big name teams to go down a little bit because they're not in the SEC. In the SEC, we reload. We don't take steps back, especially with our big name brands. So they chalk themselves up to be not just the best conference, but that much better than everybody else, and it's just not the case anymore, and they're feeling the fallout from that. Put it into perspective, 10 years ago, back in 2007, this Florida-LSU game would have national championship implications, easily. Now, it's a laughable game. It's trying to pick who sucks the least to come out and win this game. That's the point he's trying to make, is you some of these teams that suck, you've seen them suck before. We're not used to, in this last 10 years stretch, that some of the teams that suck in the SEC right now, we're not used to seeing them suck. And in Tennessee's case, we're not used to seeing them suck this long. We've expected them to kind of regroup a little bit, and they haven't. Butch Jones has done a little bit better of a job and having a winning season at least, but Tennessee's not nearly, they're still a joke and a former shell of what they used to be. And I think a big part of that is Tom Abraham's preached it over and over again as well, coaching. Coaching in the SEC outside of there are really two good coaches. You're still kind of iffy on Gus Malzahn, but right now you're thinking Kirby Smart doing a pretty good job. But outside of Nick Saban, there's nobody proven.
They've brought up that point a lot, is how poor the coaching decision, or at least from the administrative standpoint, the selecting of head coaches has been very poor. And you're right, a decade ago, this Florida LSU game, that's like. You have Auburn and Georgia cross division, Alabama, Tennessee, but LSU, Florida is that cross division game that happens every year between these brand teams that huge implications. In 2007, if you remember, LSU went on to win the national championship. Florida was coming off a national championship, and it was Tebow's first year, and Tebow gone to win the Heisman. They're playing at night in Death Valley, and that game went. I remember watching it. That game goes back and forth. Tebow runs the ball in for a touchdown late for Florida to take the lead on LSU, and that's when you hear all the fans shout the explicit at Tebow, like, you know, not going to say it, but an explicitive at Tebow. It's clear as day, you can hear it. And then they go down, and Les Miles, of course, fakes a field goal, and they run for a first down on a fourth down, end up scoring and winning the game later. And it's just back and forth excitement. And now this, you're right, this game is awful. Like, it's going to be, it's not, this game isn't competitive. I mean, it's competitive, but only from a standpoint of these teams are just bad. And it takes so much away from these big games, what used to be huge games in the SEC, to now just, it's almost like, oh, this is miserable to watch.
Yeah, it absolutely is miserable to watch. Hopefully, we'll get some decent football somewhere today. Hopefully, it's in one of the games we pick. So let's get into that. Aaron, let's go ahead and jump into the picks of the week here. We picked six. I'm trying to make it to where we pick six games a week. We've already picked one, and we already know the results of that. You got me on that one. So let's go ahead and jump into it. I'm going to kind of mix it up a little bit, not necessarily in the order on my sheet. I kind of want to get to order of importance. But Miami at Florida State, another one of those games where you're thinking, I don't know. Mark Richt has got Miami looking decent, but he's about to go up. There's still some parts about this Florida State team that you can look at and say, well, if maybe their offense and maybe Justin Blackman can pick up a little bit, maybe that defense will be good enough to shut down Miami and win. This was a very good game last year where DeAndre Francois had to grit through an injury and come back in and win this game for him. So I expect it to be, even though Florida State might
Florida
not.
Florida State blocked an extra point at the end of last year's game that gave them the win. It was a really, really exciting game. I remember it was, I don't know if it was four, I think it was fourth down, and Brad Kaya threw a fade into the end. It was really exciting, really good game. Yeah, you're right. Francois went down and then had to come back. You know, that's what we kind of expect from this Florida State-Miami game.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're exactly going to get that much excitement because I'm not really sure who Miami is. I've got faith in Mark Richt, but I don't know if he's necessarily there yet, and this will be a good test. I expect Miami to win this game because of the deficiencies for Florida State. Florida State's offensive line is awful. They are garbage. I really can't put too much on Justin Blackman. He had a very good throw to beat Wake Forest last week, but Florida State was in very realistic possibility of having three losses already on the season last week. So they're kind of in trouble. This is in Tallahassee, so that's where I have a little pause picking this game. But I am going to go with Miami. They're a three-point favorite on the road. I've got faith in Richt to finally get over a hump of one of the big, big-name schools in the ACC. I think he's going to get it done. I'm going with the Hurricanes.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you with Miami because, see, I don't think Florida State is that good. I really don't. Regardless of what you think about, yeah, Francois hurt, they're not going to be as good. It's not just DeAndre Francois that this team is missing. This team is missing a lot, and they're just – I don't think they're a very well-put-together football team right now. If Jimbo Fisher's really going to show us, you know, what he's made of, what his guys are made of in this game tonight, if they get blown out at home – they're going to be lucky to win six games this year, I think, because I think that conference is pretty tough. I think and I said earlier that the ACC is kind of down outside of Clemson, but that's one of those Alabama conundrums where one team is making the whole conference look bad. But outside of Clemson, you know, they don't get any easier for Florida State because they still have to play Clemson and they still have to play Louisville, and it's just not going to be easy for them. And then they go to are they at home against Florida this year, or they have to go to Florida? I can't remember.
I can't remember.
But, and that, of course, that's looking like it's going to be just an ugly game also. But it doesn't get any easier for Florida State. But I'm going to take Miami just because I think that they've got less problems right now. But we'll find out a lot about them in this game on the road. Big test for Miami.
Speaking of, we'll go ahead and jump into that game because I want to make an interesting point about Florida here. LSU at Florida. Florida is a 1.5-point favorite here. This is how bad the SEC is right now. You mentioned the Florida State game. Florida, looking at Florida State right now, Florida would realistically have a good chance to win that game as well. Florida has a chance if they can somehow beat Georgia, or if they lose to Georgia, they have a really good chance at being 7-1 in the SEC when it's all said and done, and being what they lost to Michigan. So if they lose to did they have a game canceled? I think they had a game.
They did. It was like the Northern Colorado game because of the hurricane.
They could realistically either be 10-1 beating Georgia going into Atlanta, this awful Florida team, or they could be 9-2 going into a good bowl game if they beat Florida State. So that's how kind of pitiful the SEC in a nutshell is right there. So let's get into that one. LSU, because of what happened last year, they have to go to Florida this year. Should have happened last year. Florida ended up – everybody thought
last year when that happened, when the changeup happened, that this was going to be the revenge game for Florida because, oh, well now you got to go to Florida next year and they're really going to be mad at you. But Florida beat them in Baton Rouge last year when the game got switched over there. So they kind of got their aggressions out anyway. Neither team playing very well. LSU and Danny Etling, they brought it to... Excuse me, that's my thoughts basically right there. That's how I feel about these two teams. But Danny Etling and LSU, there's so many question marks around him that Miles Brennan got meaningful snaps against Troy last week, threw a pick. I think Etling got hurt a little bit, but Etling had to come back in and made a big-time throw towards the end of that football game. But there's quarterback questions at LSU. There's character questions with the way their defense's intensity is playing. So I might be leaning Florida here. I'm really not sure. But then I go over there and look at Florida. Like, your defense isn't as good as it was last year, but they're still pretty good. You're doing some okay things on offense as of last week, but it was Vanderbilt. I don't know who to pick. Aaron, help me out. Who are you taking?
Well, it's tough because, like we've talked about, both these teams are bad. Both these teams have looked pitiful. Both of them have quarterback and offensive issues. But and obviously some missing players, whether it's injuries or suspensions. But you know what? I'm going to go Florida because they're at home and because I think they're the least – the lesser of two evils here. I'm not confident picking either team. It was like the Florida-Tennessee game. And, of course, that came down to a Hail Mary. This one very well could, too. But really, what I see is LSU has a glaring run defense problem. And Florida, if they don't have to put the ball in the air, they shouldn't because they don't have a quarterback. But there, I think they're just going to find a rhythm. They're going to run the football at home, control it, control the clock, and pull away with an ugly victory. So I'm going to go Florida. Wouldn't be shocked if anything happened in this game, but I'm going to go Florida. They're at home, and they're going to run the football against LSU.
Well, I'm right there with you. Florida is what I decided as well. It scares me a little bit. I know LSU's given up a lot of yards on the ground. It scares me a little bit thinking, hey, Florida, go be one-dimensional and win this football game. You know what I mean? Because one-dimensional is – I always chalk that up to being a fault for a team. Alabama can't afford to be one-dimensional. They are more than one-dimensional. But they don't have to show it. Florida needs to show it as a whole, but in this football game, they really don't because, you know, do what you're good at because that's obviously LSU's weakness right now. So I'm going to go with Florida as well. I think LaMichael Pirine and the other back they have back there are going to have a very good game.
I'm a if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of guy. Yeah. So, like, if a play's working, you know, don't quit running it until they can stop it. That's why, I mean, Auburn made a living off that in 2013, running that zone read with Marshall and Trey Mason. Nobody could stop that. And I've always been a fan of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't try to do something just to say you can do it. So that's why I'm, like I said, all four of Florida running the football in this game, and I think that's the formula to win, and they're at home, and the downward spiral will continue for LSU.
All right, we're gonna go Stanford. Yeah, let's go with this one. Stanford on the road at Utah here. Utah undefeated. They're ranked, I think, 20th so far. Stanford still coming in a 3.5-point favorite. The 3-2 Cardinals. Now they've won a couple in a row, so they're running the ball really well. Bryce Love is kind of running himself into a Heisman picture so far with his big showing last week. That seems to be obviously their strength, but I'm not sure if they have anything outside of Bryce Love. So do you see Stanford going into Utah, who's got a very good run defense, by the way? I think the 9th best run defense in the country. Do you see Stanford going in there and I guess pulling off, it wouldn't be an upset, but beating a pretty good Utah team on the road, or do you think Utah holds their ground?
Well, Utah really hasn't played anybody to this point. Their best win, I think, is BYU, and it was only 19-14, and BYU's lost 5 straight games, and they're 1-5 right now. So I'm taking Stanford. I think they're going to be able to run the ball. I think Bryce Love, I mean, I think he's leading the nation in rushing. I think he's already run for 1,000 yards this season, ran for 300 last week. I think they're just going to kind of impose their will, and it's going to be by far the best team Utah's played so far this year. So give me Stanford in this one on the road.
I'm taking Stanford as well, mainly because Utah's quarterback, Tyler Huntley, he's completing like 73% of his passes, playing very well. He's also the second leading rusher on the football team. He's out this week. He's hurt, undisclosed injury. Backup quarterback's got to come in. So give me – I think that's why Stanford's favored, because Utah's got a very good defense. I think their defense still might be do enough to keep them in this game, because Stanford doesn't have necessarily a stiff defense. They give up some yards. They don't necessarily give up a whole lot of points, but they give up some yards passing and rushing. So the Utah might find themselves still in this game a little bit. I think that's why the line is only 3.5 points. I think they do cover, but I like Stanford to win this football game. I think if Tyler Huntley was in this football game, I think Utah would win it. But I'm going to go with Stanford. All right, with a little trip to Eugene now. Washington State on the road at Oregon. Washington State coming into this game, only a 2.5-point favorite on the road. Oregon, are they back, Aaron? I know they're explosive. Don't get me wrong. I know Justin Herbert, their starting quarterback, is out. He is hurt. He will not play. But Oregon feels comfortable with either a true freshman guy or a fifth-year senior. Either way, Oregon feels really comfortable to the point where they're not sure who they want to start just because they both look so good, according to Taggart. So do you feel the same way as Willie does? Do you think, okay, Oregon, it doesn't matter who you put in there at quarterback, your offense is explosive enough to take down this Washington State team at home, or do you think Washington State goes in there and takes them down?
Well, Autzen is a tough place to play. You know, they call it the Autzen Zoo. It gets real loud. And, you know, I'm going to take Oregon in the upset. And because I think they're going to be able to run the ball with Royce Freeman, I feel like he's been there for forever, but they're going to control the ball with him. And I mean, Washington State coming off that high against USC, having to follow it up by going on the road to Oregon. Give me the Ducks, the Quack Attack at home. Going to be close, going to be fun. I think this is a Pac-12 after dark game, if I'm not mistaken. It'll be fun. So give me Oregon at home.
Thought I was going to get a game on you there because I'm going with the Ducks also. I thought for sure you would go with Washington State because Herbert was out for Oregon. But no, I'm going with Oregon as well. I think Freeman, you've got the experience with Luke Falk coming in here. He's been around a while. He's a very good quarterback. He's poised enough. But I'm with you. They've got experience with Royce Freeman back there. They feel so good about these quarterbacks. And first and second year head coaches usually, you know, get their teams to play past their potential against certain teams. And Willie Taggart, his first year over here at Oregon, has got them playing very well. So I'm going to go with the Ducks as well. The Ducks, this is a game, since Washington State's undefeated and they're highly ranked, this is a game Oregon's going to get up for. This is a game that Alston Stadium is going to be absolutely on fire for. I think the Ducks come out on top. I think it's going to be close, though. It's going to be a close. The 2.5-point spread's probably right on. But I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, probably 40s and 30s. The winner probably comes out 49-38 or 49-42, something crazy like that. But I'm going to go Oregon as well. I really wish you would have picked Washington State because I feel comfortable with that, about that one. Now, the game day game of the week, well, Corso here in about 30 minutes is going to make his head pick for West Virginia on the road at TCU, Fort Worth. The Horned Frogs come in as a 13.5-point favorite. You mentioned just a minute ago that Washington State coming off of a little bit of a high after blowing out, but after beating USC. TCU, a couple weeks ago, they did take down Oklahoma State. Now, West Virginia's not that awful of a team. They've got question marks as well. It is the Big 12. Defense is always a question mark. It's always optional in the Big 12. West Virginia, do they cover? Do they win? What happens here, Aaron? What do you think?
I think West Virginia breaks this spread for sure. I think almost two touchdowns is too big for this game. I think it's going to be a shootout. Will Greer's been incredibly efficient with the football this year, but Kenny Hill's been very good also. But I think that overall, TCU is just a better team, and I think they're going to make enough plays defensively. They're at home. I think they can be a little bit more balanced with running the pass. I think West Virginia is going to be mainly, you know, just try to air this out, and they're going to force some turnovers. It's going to be very close. So I think it's going to be high scoring, entertaining game because, like you said, defense is optional. But give me the Horned Frogs at home.
Well, that seals it. The Louisville NC State game is the only game we picked against each other this week because I'm going with TCU as well. I'm with you. I think they're the better team. I think they're the better coach team. I think Gary Patterson, hands down, is the second best coach in that conference. He might be the best coach in the conference now that Bob Stoops is gone. I'm so used to just automatically qualifying Bob Stoops up there. But Bill Snyder, if we're talking legacy, he's probably, the legacy-wise, the best. But as far as right now, Gary Patterson's the best head coach in that conference, better than Mike Gundy. I said it a couple weeks ago when they played each other. Dana Holgerson's very good as well. But they're at home. I think it was 17-0 or 13-0, something like that. They're double digits and 0 at home when they're ranked in the top 10. And that's Gary Patterson, who brought this team from a non-traditional football team to a Power 5 football team, and they're still at home undefeated when they're ranked in the top 10. So I feel comfortable about TCU in this game. I think Will Greer he's going to have a good game. TCU, they've got a good defense, Big 12 standard-wise. They can get up front. They can stop the run. Big 12 defenses, some people forget, like the higher tier teams like Oklahoma and TCU, they can play physical up front. And West Virginia as well. They play physical up front, and they can stop the run. But it's the pass because of the athletes and the spread and the speed of these guys that's hard to stop. So I think TCU is a very physical team up front. I think they're going to stop the run. I don't think Kenny Hill's going to have to do too much. I think he does enough to get the job done. But West Virginia's running defense is terrible. TCU's got a fantastic rushing attack. They show that against Oklahoma State. I'm going with the Horned Frogs as well. So there it is, Aaron. We picked the same five teams on games that are happening today. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about a little bit of a college football playoff. Who we think, as of right now, the body of work we've seen, who we think is going to make the playoffs. That happens next. Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Yonk. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet. Gave you our picks of the week for some of the big games we got going on. Now, something a little more interesting. College football playoff. Now, Aaron, the top three, pretty easy. I think after USC lost, everybody feels like picking a top four as of right now would be really easy just because, well, we'll throw Penn State in there now. I mean, there's no real Pac-12 threat right now. I don't think you should go that far. I wouldn't go that far. So, with that being said, let's go ahead with that little tease. Aaron, if the college football play, well, I wouldn't say if it ended today. I want you, based on what we've seen so far on the field, kind of predict the rest of the schedules. I don't want you to go game through game and tell me, but where do you see the college, what do you see the college football playoff looking like now that we're more than a quarter way through the season? You've got a good sample size of some of these teams. Look at it and say, okay, I see this team running through the schedule, or they might trip up here, so they're not in the playoff or whatever. Give me, based on all that information, your top four.
Well, the teams that I think that are going to be in it at the end, obviously I've got Alabama still. I've got Clemson. Alabama and Clemson have distanced themselves from the other teams in college football like they have the past couple of years anyway, and it looks as if those two teams are on a collision course for a third straight national championship meeting. I was actually watching Mike and Mike the other day and yesterday morning with and my wife got up before she went to work because I was off yesterday and and she saw what they were talking about and she's like, what are they talking about? I was like, oh, just how Alabama and Clemson are about to meet for a third straight national championship. And she put it in the best way possible, simply. And my wife doesn't, she's not a football fan, not a sports person, but she recognized, she knows, she, her brilliance showed in sports, because this is all she said, that's boring. and it is to an extent
as well,
and it is unprecedented, and it's, I don't think it's technically good for college football. I think last year was great, the rematch, but three in a row, it's a little ridiculous, but it looks as if that's the way it's going to be. I don't think there's as big of a gap between those teams as the rest of the country, as a lot of people seem to think, because I think Oklahoma is right there. They're my number three right now, because I think they're going to win out and win the Big 12. I think Alabama, barring, you know, an upset from Auburn or Georgia, either Auburn in the last game of the season or Georgia in the SEC championship game, they're going to end the season unbeaten. Clemson's going to be unbeaten. Oklahoma's going to be unbeaten. And so there's that last spot that's open, and it's a toss-up. You could go Washington if you think Washington's going to end the season unbeaten, which a lot of people think because they have a favorable schedule. It's very favorable. And, you mean, they have Washington State at the end of the season, and they potentially have USC in the conference championship game. So, but I just don't think – I'm not buying into Washington. And I had Washington in my original playoff, but because I've got – I didn't have Clemson. Now I've got them. I'm bumping Washington out because I do think they're going to slip up at some point to some team. I don't think they looked as great as they did last year, so I don't think they're going to be there at the end of the season. I think someone will get them, probably on the road somewhere. But my last team is it's going to be the Big Ten champ. Whoever wins the Big Ten is going to be that fourth team, and they may or may not be unbeaten, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now it's not going to be Penn State, because Penn State is going to get beat by Ohio State and Michigan, and I just don't see them. They haven't played anybody yet, and people want to crown them as national champions and give Saquon Barkley the Heisman. I'm wearing a Penn State shirt today, and I'm dogging them a little bit. But it's true. Like, Like, they haven't played anybody yet, and they should have got beat by Iowa. So, I think they're going to get – they're going to end up 9-2. They're going to lose to Ohio State and Michigan. I'm going to take Ohio State simply because they didn't look good against Oklahoma, but I think they've done some – I mean, Urban Meyer is easily the second-best coach, if not tied for the best coach, probably second-best coach in college football. He's going to make some adjustments. They're going to be there, and I think they're going to beat Penn State, and then they're going to have to beat Michigan at the end and then beat, you know, Wisconsin in the Big Ten. The Big Ten championship game is
– like the SEC championship game, unless Georgia actually turns out to be. It's like the SEC game the last 2 years.
Yeah, and so – the SEC champion will be decided from the Big Ten East, or the SEC champion is decided from the West, like the Big Ten is decided from the East. So it'll probably be between Ohio State and Michigan, and the winner of that game gets into the playoff. And I'm going to go with Ohio State because I picked them preseason, so I'm going to stick with them while they're still alive. Obviously, if they lose again, they're out. But so I'm taking Ohio State as my four. So I've got Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and Ohio State, which is boring, but at least Oklahoma is a little bit different than it was last year with not Washington, but it could be Washington. But I think it's the Big Ten champion, Alabama, Clemson, and Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Alabama at one, Clemson at two. I think the way Alabama closes out the season, the way they're blowing SEC opponents out, it's going to keep them at the one seed. I think you could easily make an argument at the end of the season for maybe Clemson being the number one team. But if Alabama beats Auburn and Georgia, if they continue to be this good, Auburn and Georgia, I think that's going to solidify Alabama being at number one. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It just decides what jersey color you're going to be wearing in the championship game if y'all two meet. So I've got them 1 and 2. It doesn't matter what order. I've got Alabama 1, Clemson 2. I've got Oklahoma at 3, mainly because I think that they got a wake-up call against an awful Baylor team who came back and took a lead on multiple occasions against Oklahoma. And... sorry, I'm trying to read this tweet. Somebody mentioned Oklahoma in a tweet, so I'm trying not to. Falling on my laces mentioned something, but I feel like Oklahoma is more physical of a football team than they showed against Baylor. They're that physical team they showed against Ohio State, and they had a bye week last week to show that and to wake themselves up. I think they're going to go in there today and bully Iowa State. That's going to set them up. Next week's going to be the deciding factor in what Oklahoma does, because it's not TCU next weekend. It's not Oklahoma State. It's Texas. And while Texas might be down, they always get up to play Oklahoma. Their talent will show like it did against USC, and that will be the big game. If Oklahoma gets over that hump, they will run through this Big 12, and they will dominate. So I'm going to go with Oklahoma being in the playoff at number 3. Number 4, it really just depends on who wins the Big 10 championship for me, because this is how I see it. If Ohio State ends up winning, that means they'll have to beat Penn State, and they'll have to beat Michigan, and they'll be undefeated in their conference. They'll win. But it's mainly because I just don't see Michigan being able to put up a fight against Ohio State. Mainly, I think the only reason Ohio State's going to be Penn State, revenge factor. So, but if Penn State's able to come out, I think they don't come out unscathed. I think they come out with a loss, which would mean they have one loss on the season. And I think Washington's going to come out undefeated. If they do, don't get me wrong, there are some hangups for Washington along the way. Their last three games of the season are rough. They've got to go to Stanford. They have Utah and Washington State at home. Back to back to back. That's tough because you get a Stanford team who can run really well. You get Utah who plays really good defense. Then you get Washington State. Mike Leach can do anything. So that's a tough three-game stretch, but I like Chris Peterson better than any of those head coaches. And maybe Whittingham's really good, but I love Chris Peterson as a head coach. If they pull out that schedule, they're going to get in, and you're going to see Penn State, Washington, part two. Last year, it was a two-loss Penn State Big Ten champion and a one-loss Washington champion who really didn't have that good of a non-conference schedule. Washington's one-loss self got in. You're going to see the same thing, but a little different. An undefeated Washington against a one-loss Penn State Big Ten champion. I think in that situation, Washington gets in. If Ohio State runs the table, they get in because their only loss would be to another playoff team in Oklahoma. So I'm gonna say that it's the other situation. I'm going to say Washington squeezes in, and I've got Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and Washington for my playoff four. And it really just, now that you mentioned Ohio State, I'm feeling more along the lines of Ohio State, just because now when they go into this Penn State game, they've got the big chip on their shoulder because they were dominated at home by Oklahoma. And I think the only realistic chance they have at losing is against Penn State. And it's a built-in revenge game because of what Penn State did to them last year. So I think the path for Ohio State is very, very clear. And I won't be surprised. I'm still going to stay with my pick, but I won't be surprised if you see Ohio State in the playoff. And it looks more like my original Final Four did at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and like you said, it's going to come down to that Big Ten champ. And Ohio State, they've always been better after they've lost a game. It feels like they get better as the – I mean, last year they were totally embarrassed by Clemson in the playoff. And, of course, the Big Ten has – I mean, they've been in the playoff every year. But they have some, you know, making up to do because they've gotten outscored in the last two college football playoff games that they've gotten in. They've gotten outscored 69-0 combined in the last two playoff games they've been a part of. So they've got some they've got some making up to do and some, you know, something to prove, at least if they get in the playoff, because they don't want to get, you know, shut out for a third consecutive year. But I don't think that will happen, regardless of who gets in. But, you know, I mean it's looking more and more, like I said, Alabama Clemson third straight time to meet in the national championship game. And now I'm going to ask you this question, because usually you're the one asking me the questions and what I think. So I'm going to ask you this. Is that good for college football that Alabama and Clemson meet for the third straight year? Is it good to see these two teams be so dominant that it almost makes it feel, you know, irrelevant?
I really think it just depends on what we see in the playoff. Because as of right now, if it's any indication with the regular season, no, it's not good. Because what that tells me is while Alabama and Clemson are standing out among the rest, and they have great talent, and I'm not trying to take away from the great coaching, I feel like a lot of it has to do with just how down a lot of these other, you know, big teams are. We're not seeing good games. We're not seeing competitive games. We're seeing all this talent go to one conference or the other, and they're stockpiling, and everything's really top-heavy. And it's so top-heavy to where you're looking forward to maybe one or two games throughout the football season, and then even that game turns out to be a blowout, and you're looking at it and you're thinking, wow, Alabama and or Clemson, they're really just that much better than everybody else, and this regular season's boring. So it kind of hinges on what the playoff looks like. If Alabama and Clemson both play in a competitive first round, then and it's close and they have to earn their way by more than just other teams sucking, if they actually have to beat a good team to get to the championship game, I think that might make it worth it. And if we get a good championship game, if we get a great first round of the playoff and a great championship game, I think that makes it worth it. Because last year, in my opinion, that national championship made the season worth it. There were a lot of times where it was really boring. The first round of the playoffs were really boring, but that national championship, again, the last two we've ranked in maybe our top 10 championships of all time. They've been that competitive. So if we can get that kind of competitiveness in a championship game, and maybe that in one of the playoff games, the first round playoff games, I think it's absolutely worth it. But as of right now, I think we need to see a change. And I don't think it's necessarily how it ends up being a letdown. I think it's the path getting there is the big letdown, because this regular season is so bad. And it's mainly because we go off of these rankings. And the preseason rankings, you see that maybe a 15 by a team when your team's on a bye week, and you want to go watch that team. Or this team's ranked, so you want to watch that team. We hinge all of our viewership off of our favorite team and ranked teams. And the rankings come out too early, and these teams might suck, and you're not getting good quality games, or they might just be that much better than everybody else, and the competition isn't what you hoped it was, and it's just a big letdown. And that's what college football has been. The regular season has been a gigantic letdown for the last couple of years, and we just need to see more competitiveness across the board. And like I said, I don't think that has to do with who meets in the championship game, because they're the best of the best. I think it has to do with the path getting there.
Yeah, and you had – I mean, what happened to those big SEC games, you know, on Saturday night or at 2:30 that were really competitive down to the wire that mattered? You know, when Alabama and LSU were both competitive, when Florida and LSU were both competitive, it's gone away, because Alabama, they get on big stage against what's supposedly a good SEC opponent and just – drub them. Like, it's just it's a blowout. And Clemson does the same thing over in the ACC, so it's just – The regular season looks bad, but you're right. Last year's championship game was the second best college football national championship game I think I've ever seen, outside of Texas USC in 2006 or 2006 Rose Bowl, 2005 season. But I personally look for more of a change, because you're right. The regular season is painful sometimes, because you just don't get. I mean, last year you had Louisville and Clemson, regular season. What other, like, big monumental games, other than that one week when Michigan and Clemson and Washington all got beat in the same week. Other than that week and then Louisville-Clemson game.
You had a Michigan-Ohio State game that was a really
Michigan,
good
Michigan-Ohio
well.
State was but, very good.
But exactly. You have to think to pick to pick these games. And let's be 100% honest. We all know what's going to make this change better and what's going to get the SEC kick-started again. The number one thing that's going to start this resurgence of the talent being spread out throughout college football again is when Saban leaves Alabama. Let's be honest about that. Whenever Saban leaves, that's when college football gets better. It's good right now as everybody still loves college football because you have that chance of going after Alabama, but it'll be more competitive when he leaves because, hands down, you know he's the better coach. You know he's going to get the better talent. And that's the best, in quotations, best conference in the country in the SEC is down because the coaches in that conference, they suck because he's pushed them all out. He's just beaten the crap out of them. For all the good ones, they leave for the better jobs, and they're starting to assert their dominance over certain conferences. And all the other ones are getting beat out of jobs in college football. We don't know how good of a head coach they are. We know how good they are compared to Nick Saban, but we don't know. They don't get enough time to build other programs. They need to start elsewhere because there are coaches in the SEC that have no business being coaches in the SEC. Butch Jones, absolutely one of them. Matt Luke, he's interim basis. He's one of them. Derek Mason, maybe not deserving of a head coaching job, maybe a coordinator's position.
Barry Odom.
Barry Odom has no spot in the SEC.
Missouri has no spot in the SEC, period.
Exactly. And I don't think you can really make a permanent change towards making the SEC amazing again because it's all going to be null and void because you still have to go against Saban and you just can't compete again. There's nothing you can do right now because he's been so dominant for so long. There's never going to be anything you can do ever while he's at Alabama that's going to make you better than them permanently. You might be able to beat them one week, but that doesn't make you better than them. It means you got the better of them that game. Ole Miss got lucky one year. You know what I mean? So it all starts when he leaves. Then you can start making a permanent plan for coaches and getting other players because the big elephant in the room's gone. And I don't mean that to make a pun because Alabama's, you know, mascot's the elephant. It just kind of worked out that way. But Nick Saban has to leave before college football gets better. And that's just all there is to it.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And then you've got Dabo Sweeney. I mean, it's...
But Dabo's great. Don't get me wrong. Dabo's great, but he's not that dominant force that Saban is. Dabo's that normal type of dominance we've seen. Take Nick Saban away. Remember when Pete Carroll went to back-to-back championships and won back-to-back championships? Remember how amazing that was? How awesome it was to see a college head coach get two national championships? That used to be regular greatness. That was greatness back then. Nick Saban has changed that. But two national championships didn't make all of the talent for every year ever afterwards want to come play for your school. Talent was still spread out, and there were still really good coaches out there that weren't getting pushed out of their conference. Now, it's so one-sided in Nick Saban's favor. He's rewritten greatness. We're not familiar with this. We don't know how to take this in. Number one, we don't know how to comprehend it, which definitely means we don't know how to stop it. So he's absolutely changed the face of football.
I mean, we're in the midst of probably the most dominant run in college football history.
Hands down, the greatest stretch ever.
And you have the USC stretch where they were so great for so long, but, I mean, it didn't feel like this. You had Miami in the 80s and 90s and then the early 2000s. But it never felt like this. And it's been this way for almost a decade. And, you know, four national championships and no less than one loss in a season later, every season later for all those seasons, and this is what you got. And I think you're right. And while there's coaches out there like Dabo Sweeney and Urban Meyer who are great and who are almost as good, but it just takes a lot. It's taken a lot away from especially the SEC. The SEC deals with it Nick Saban killed the SEC is what people like to say, and I think that's true to an extent. I think that he has something to do with it, and the coaching hires have been poor.
Yeah.
But he contributes to – nobody wants to come in and coach against Nick Saban. Nobody wants to do that.
Take Saban away from Alabama, and you're looking at Jimbo Fisher. You're looking at Dabo Sweeney. You're looking at Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer would be the number one head coach, and what he has done would be unprecedented. You're like, oh, my gosh, this guy's won three national championships, two different schools. He went into Ohio State, did something awesome. Some of these, we would be making arguments. They're some of the greatest coaches we've seen growing up because we're so young. But Nick Saban's in here. And because you can take what Urban Meyer's done, and you can take what Sweeney's done and Fisher's done, and equate that to another era back in the day and compare them to some of the other great coaches of our parents' time or our grandparents' time. Nick Saban stands alone in any generation, in any era.
I will say this. If Urban Meyer were to win one more national championship, which I think it's fair to say by the time it's all said and done, he will have won at least one more national championship by the time he's done. I mean, Nick Saban has five combined at two schools, and he would have four. And Urban Meyer's record at Ohio State is absurdly good. Like, he's only lost like seven games since he's been there.
And another point to that great point you're making is the first year – the second year Nick Saban was at Alabama, when they went that undefeated and lost two postseason games, everybody was talking about how amazing of a job he did in that game, or that season. Well, let's not forget when Urban Meyer went to Ohio State his first season, he went undefeated. He didn't lose a game until the Big Ten Championship his second year?
Second year, because the first year they were on probation. And had
he took a 7-5 team and went undefeated. That team outside of, who was it, Terrell Pryor?
Braxton Miller.
Were awful. They weren't that good. They deservingly so were a 7-5 team, and he took them undefeated.
Yeah, and then they went 14-0 before they lost to Michigan State in the Big Ten championship game, and then they've only, like I said, they lost that one. They lost to Michigan State a couple years ago. They lost to Penn State and Clemson last year. They lost. That's four, I know for sure. I think they've got one or two more losses in there somewhere. But his record is absurd. What he's doing is, because Nick Saban's been in Alabama longer than he's been at Ohio State, it overshadows what he's done. But what Urban Meyer's done, at least at Ohio State, and what he did at Florida was great too. Not as dominant as Nick Saban by any means, but he did win two out of three at Florida. And now what he's doing at Ohio State is ridiculous against – and he hasn't killed the conference that he's in. By any means, they're better than they were when he got there, and he's still winning all these games. That's the best division in football that they're in right now.
And something people don't realize, because I think they want to forget about it because Urban Meyer got blown out by Clemson last year in the playoff. He's also 2-0 against Saban in the postseason. He beat Saban in the SEC title game, and he beat Nick Saban in a playoff game. Two games that matter. A lot of people talk about when Alabama play bowl games that aren't national championship implicated, that they don't get up to play. SEC championship in 08, Alabama was undefeated. Saban's second year as a head coach, they had everything to play for. Urban Meyer got the better of them. First college football playoff ever directly linked to the national championship game. The winner goes to the national championship game. Urban Meyer beat him. So
he did.
He's absolutely the second best. I think Dabo's up there, but Urban Meyer is still full body of work, the second best head coach in college football.
And Urban Meyer got away. I mean, obviously Nick Saban got the better of him in 09, the year after that. But, I mean, it's just a good coaching.
I'm sorry, 2-1, excuse me. My bad, I forgot about that.
It's a good coaching chess match is what that is. And really it's as good as it gets in football. But really it's those three teams. Yeah. And, I mean, and Ohio State hasn't been great offensively, probably which I think one thing that will help is when JT Barrett graduates, and just the regression of him has been it's been odd to say the least. But they're so talented, but all three of those teams are so much more talented in my opinion than the rest. But you're right, and this era of just dominant coaches, I think, over at least having three teams anyway that are just polarizingly good. With one being way more so than the others, but it hurts the sport. I think. I mean, college football ratings are up, actually, this year, and still trending up. But yet, people are tuning in to see the same old story.
Yeah.
Every year. Which is nothing's going to keep me from watching, but it's just going back to the original question. I think college football, at least this year, needs two teams other than those two to meet for the championship. But right now, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it is going to be those two teams.
Yeah, I definitely agree. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up this show in a very, very quick segment right here on Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Elm. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet. Very, very quick segment here. We got maybe a minute left, but just telling you guys, thanks for listening. It was a great show. See, there's the music already, 30 seconds. Great show. On Aaron's behalf, I'm Tony Mack. That is Aaron Triplett. This has been Tony Mack and the Triplett. We're going to send you off to your 11 o'clock games, whether it's Clemson, Wake Forest, Iowa State, Oklahoma, Penn State, Northwestern, Georgia, Vanderbilt, or Ole Miss at Auburn. Go enjoy your college football Saturday, starting with those games. Once again, I'm Tony Mack. Aaron Triplett, thank you for joining me. This has been Tony Mack and the Triplett. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.